And you really solved it?
Readily. I have solved others of an abstruseness 10,000 times greater. Circumstances, and a certain bias of mind, have led me to take interest in such riddles, and it may well be doubted whether human ingenuity can construct an enigma of the kind which human ingenuity may not, by proper application, resolve. In fact, having once established connected and legible characters, I scarcely gave a thought to the mere difficulty of developing their import. In the present case, indeed in all cases of secret writing, the first question regards the language of the cipher. For the principles of solution, so far especially, as the more simple ciphers are concerned, depend upon and are varied by the genius of the particular idiom. In general, there is no alternative but experiment, directed by probabilities, of every tongue known to him who attempts the solution until the true one be obtained. But, with the cipher now before us, all difficulty was removed by the signature. The pun upon the word kid is appreciable in no other language than the English. But for this consideration, I should have begun my attempts with the Spanish and French, as the tongues in which a secret of this kind would most naturally have been written by a pirate of the Spanish main. As it was, I assumed the cryptograph to be English. You observe there are no divisions between the words. Had there been divisions, the task would have been comparatively easy. In such cases, I should have commenced with a collation and analysis of the shorter words. And had a word of a single letter occurred, as is most likely, A or I, for example, I should have considered the solution as assured. But there being no division, my first step was to ascertain the predominant letters as well as the least frequent. Counting all, I constructed a table thus. Of the character 8, there are 33. Of the character semicolon, there are 26. Of the character 4, there are 19. Of the characters for a double plus and a parentheses, there are 16. Of the character asterisk, there are 13. Of the character 5, there are 12. Of the character 6, there are 11. Of the characters for a cross and a 1, there are 8. Of the character 0, there are 6. Of the characters for a 9 and a 2, there are 5. Of the characters for a colon and a 3, there are 4. Of the character question mark, there are 3. Of the character pilcro, there are 2. And of the characters for a dash and a period, there are 1. Now, in English, the letter which most frequently occurs is E. Afterward, the succession runs thus. A, O, I, D, H, N, R, S, T, U, Y, C, F, G, L, M, W, B, K, P, Q, X, Z. E predominates so remarkably that an individual sentence of any length is rarely seen in which it is not the prevailing character. Here, then, we have in the very beginning the groundwork for something more than a mere guess. The general use which may be made of the table is obvious, but in this particular cipher, we shall only very partially require its aid. As our predominant character is 8, we will commence by assuming it as the E of the natural alphabet. To verify the supposition, let us observe if the 8 be seen often in couples, for E is doubled with great frequency in English. In such words, for example, as meet, fleet, speed, seen, been, agree, etc. In the present instance, we see it doubled no less than 5 times, although the cryptograph is brief. Let us assume 8, then, as E. Now, of all words in the language, the is most usual. Let us see, therefore, whether there are not repetitions of any 3 characters in the same order of collocation, the last of them being 8. If we discover repetitions of such letters, so arranged, they will most probably represent the word the. Upon inspection, we find no less than 7 such arrangements, the characters being semicolon, 4, 8. We may, therefore, assume that semicolon represents T, 4 represents H, and 8 represents E, the last being now well confirmed. Thus, a great step has been taken. But, having established a single word, we are enabled to establish a vastly important point, that is to say, several commencements and terminations of other words. Let us refer, for example, to the last instance but one in which the combination semicolon 4-8 occurs, not far from the end of the cipher. We know that the semicolon immediately ensuing is the commencement of a word, and of the six characters succeeding this, the, we are cognizant of no less than five. Let us set these characters down, thus, by the letters we know them to represent, leaving a space for the unknown. T, space, E-E-T-H. Here we are enabled, at once, to discard the T-H as forming no portion of the word commencing with the first T, since, by experiment of the entire alphabet for a letter adapted to the vacancy, we perceive that no word can be formed of which this T-H can be a part. We are thus narrowed into T, space, E-E. And going through the alphabet, if necessary as before, we arrive at the word tree as the sole possible reading. We thus gain another letter, R, represented by left parentheses, with the words the tree in juxtaposition. Looking beyond these words for a short distance, we again see the combination semicolon 4-8 and employ it by way of termination to what immediately precedes. We have thus this arrangement. The tree, semicolon, 4, parentheses, double plus, question mark, 3, 4, the. Or substituting the natural letters where known, it reads thus. The tree, THR, double plus, question mark, 3, H, the. Now, if, in place of the unknown characters, we leave blank spaces, or substitute dots, we read thus. The tree, THR, dot, 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 H, the, when the word through makes itself evident at once. But this discovery gives us three new letters, O, U, and G, represented by double plus, question mark, and three. Looking now narrowly through the cipher for combinations of known characters, we find, not very far from the beginning, this arrangement. 8-3, parenthesis 8-8, or egree, which plainly is the conclusion of the word degree, and gives us another letter, D, represented by a cross. Four letters beyond the word degree, we perceive the combination semicolon 4-6 parentheses semicolon 8-8. Translating the known characters and representing the unknown by dots, as before, we read thus. T-H-dot-R-T-E-E, an arrangement immediately suggestive of the word 13, and again furnishing us with two new characters, I and N, represented by 6 and asterisk. Referring now to the beginning of the cryptograph, we find the combination 5-3 double plus, plus. Translating as before, we obtain good, which assures us that the first letter is A, and that the first two words are A, good. It is now time that we arrange our key, as far as discovered, in a tabular form to avoid confusion. It will stand thus. 5 represents A. The cross represents D. 8 represents E. 3 represents G. 4 represents H. 6 represents I. The asterisk represents N. The double plus represents O. The parenthesis represents R. The semicolon represents T. And the question mark represents U. We have, therefore, no less than 11 of the most important letters represented, and it will be unnecessary to proceed with the details of the solution. I have said enough to convince you that ciphers of this nature are readily soluble and to give you some insight into the rationale of their development. But be assured that the specimen before us appertains to the very simplest species of cryptograph. It now only remains to give you the full translation of the characters upon the parchment as unriddled. Here it is. A good glass in the bishop's hostel in the devil's seat, 41 degrees and 13 minutes northeast, and by north, main branch, seventh limb, east side, shoot from the left eye of the death's head, a beeline from the tree, through the shot 50 feet out. But, said I, the enigma seems still in as bad a condition as ever. How is it possible to extort a meaning from all this jargon about devil's seats, death's heads, and bishop's hostels? I confess, replied Legrand, that the matter still wears a serious aspect when regarded with a casual glance. My first endeavor was to divide the sentence into the natural division intended by the cryptographist. You mean to punctuate it? Something of that kind. But how is it possible to effect this? I reflected that it had been a point with the writer to run his words together without division, so as to increase the difficulty of solution. Now, a not over-acute man, in pursuing such an object, would be nearly certain to overdo the matter. When, in the course of his composition, he arrived at a break in his subject, which would naturally require a pause or a point, he would be exceedingly apt to run his characters at this place more than usually close together. If you will observe the manuscript in the present instance, you will easily detect 5 such cases of unusual crowding. Acting upon his hint, I made the division thus. A good glass in the bishop's hostel in the devil's seat. 41 degrees and 13 minutes. Northeast and by north. Main branch, seventh limb, east side. Shoot from the left eye of the death's head. A beeline from the tree through the shot, 50 feet out. Even this division, said I, leaves me still in the dark. It left me also in the dark, replied Legrand, for a few days, during which I made diligent inquiry in the neighborhood of Sullivan's Island for any building which went by the name of the Bishop's Hotel, for of course I dropped the obsolete word hostel. Gaining no information on the subject, I was on the point of extending my sphere of search and proceeding in a more systematic manner when, one morning, it entered my head quite suddenly that this Bishop's Hostel might have some reference to an old family of the name of Bessop, which, time out of mind, had held possession of an ancient manor house about 4 miles to the northward of the island. I, accordingly, went over to the plantation and reinstituted my inquiries among the older negroes of the place. At length, one of the most aged of the women said that she had heard of such a place as Bessop's Castle and thought that she could guide me to it, but that it was not a castle, nor a tavern, but a high rock. I offered to pay her well for her trouble, and after some demur, she consented to accompany me to the spot. We found it without much difficulty, when, dismissing her, I proceeded to examine the place. The castle consisted of an irregular assemblage of cliffs and rocks, one of the latter being quite remarkable for its height, as well as for its insulated and artificial appearance. I clambered to its apex, and then felt much at a loss as to what should be next done. While I was busied in reflection, my eyes fell upon a narrow ledge in the eastern face of the rock, perhaps a yard below the summit upon which I stood. This ledge projected about 18 inches, and was not more than a foot wide, while a niche in the cliff just above it gave it a rude resemblance to one of the hollow-backed chairs used by our ancestors. I made no doubt that here was the devil's seat alluded to in the manuscript, and now I seemed to grasp the full secret of the riddle. The good glass, I knew, could have reference to nothing but a telescope, for the word glass is rarely employed in any other sense by seamen. Now, here, I at once saw, was a telescope to be used, and a definite point of view admitting no variation from which to use it. Nor did I hesitate to believe that the phrases 41 degrees and 13 minutes and northeast and by north were intended as directions for the leveling of the glass. Greatly excited by these discoveries, I hurried home, procured a telescope, and returned to the rock. I let myself down to the ledge and found that it was impossible to retain a seat upon it except in one particular position. This fact confirmed my preconceived idea. I proceeded to use the glass. Of course, the 41 degrees and 13 minutes could allude to nothing but elevation above the visible horizon, since the horizontal direction was clearly indicated by the words northeast and by north. This latter direction I at once established by means of a pocket compass. Then, pointing the glass as nearly at an angle of 41 degrees of elevation as I could do it by guess, I moved it cautiously up or down until my attention was arrested by a circular rift or opening in the foliage of a large tree that overtopped its fellows in the distance. In the center of this rift, I perceived a white spot, but could not at first distinguish what it was. Adjusting the focus of the telescope, I again looked, and now made it out to be a human skull. Upon this discovery, I was so sanguine as to consider the enigma solved. For the phrase, main branch, seventh limb, east side, could refer only to the position of the skull upon the tree, while shoot from the left eye of the death's head admitted also of but one interpretation in regard to a search for buried treasure. I perceived that the design was to drop a bullet from the left eye of the skull, and that a beeline, or in other words, a straight line, drawn from the nearest point of the trunk through the shot, or the spot where the bullet fell, and thence extended to a distance of 50 feet, would indicate a definite point. And beneath this point, I thought it at least possible that a deposit of value lay concealed. All this, I said, is exceedingly clear and, although ingenious, still simple and explicit. When you left the Bishop's Hotel, what then? Why, having carefully taken the bearings of the tree, I turned homeward. The instant that I left the Devil's Seat, however, the circular rift vanished, nor could I get a glimpse of it afterward, turn as I would. What seems to me the chief ingenuity in this whole business is the fact, for repeated experiment has convinced me it is a fact, that the circular opening in question is visible from no other attainable point of view than that afforded by the narrow ledge upon the face of the rock. In this expedition to the Bishop's Hotel, I had been attended by Jupiter, who had no doubt observed for some weeks past the abstraction of my demeanor, and took especial care not to leave me alone. But on the next day, getting up very early, I contrived to give him the slip, and went into the hills in search of the tree. After much toil, I found it. When I came home at night, my valet proposed to give me a flogging. With the rest of the adventure, I believe you are as well acquainted as myself. I suppose, said I, you missed the spot in the first attempt at digging through Jupiter's stupidity in letting the bug fall through the right instead of through the left eye of the skull. Precisely. This mistake made a difference of about 2.5 inches in the shot, that is to say, in the position of the peg nearest the tree, and had the treasure been beneath shot, the error would have been of little moment, but the shot, together with the nearest point of the tree, were merely 2 points for the establishment of a line of direction. Of course, the error, however trivial in the beginning, increased as we proceeded with the line, and by the time we had gone 50 feet, threw us quite off the scent. But for my deep-seated impressions that treasure was here somewhere actually buried, we might have had all our labor in vain. But your grandiloquence and your conduct in swinging the beetle, how excessively odd! I was sure you were mad. And why did you insist upon letting fall the bug instead of a bullet from the skull? Why, to be frank, I felt somewhat annoyed by your evident suspicions touching my sanity, and so resolved to punish you quietly in my own way by a little bit of sober mystification. For this reason I swung the beetle, and for this reason I let it fall from the tree. An observation of yours about its great weight suggested the latter idea. Yes, I perceive. And now there is only one point which puzzles me. What are we to make of the skeletons found in the hole? That is a question I am no more able to answer than yourself. There seems, however, only one plausible way of accounting for them. And yet it is dreadful to believe in such atrocity as my suggestion would imply. It is clear that Kidd, if Kidd indeed secreted this treasure, which I doubt not, it is clear that he must have had assistance in the labor. But this labor concluded, he may have thought it expedient to remove all participants in his secret. Perhaps a couple of blows with a mattock were sufficient while his coadjutors were busy in the pit. Perhaps it required a dozen. Who shall tell?